Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about land and farms, buying and selling, ownership, especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. Free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant with the United Country Real Estate, Sutton Properties, along with my co-host, Teresa Martin, who's not here with us today, out selling real estate. Buying or selling homes, land or farms, or want to auction your property in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, or Southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our office is at 102 East Main Street next to BB&T in downtown Pilot Mountain, North Carolina. Our website is www.allsuttonproperties.com. That's A-L-L-S-U-T-T-O-N properties.com. This show is dedicated to the Realtors Land Institute, to the members, and to the staff. Please make a program note that Dr. Barbie's Ask the Doctor show will air following this show at 10 a.m., so make sure you stay tuned. Dr. Barbie always has something to do. So let's talk land today with our guest, Russell Riggs. Welcome, Russell.
Hello, Lou. How are you doing?
You're calling from Washington, D.C.?
Indeed.
Congratulations. Russell is our senior policy representative for the National Association of Realtors for the past 23, almost 24 years now, Russell. And you're an advocate.
Close to 24 years.
Yeah, and you advocate on behalf of realtors on energy, environment, property rights, immigration, natural resource issues before Congress and the federal regulatory agencies. Russell also serves as an advocacy liaison for the Realtors Land Institute, our organization, the National Association's Global and Business Affairs Group, and the National Association Realtor Resort and Second Home Group. Prior to his position at NAR, Russell held positions with the United States Department of Energy, the Council of State Governments, the National Governors Association, and the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. You've had quite a career there, Russell. How'd you get into all this? You went to Virginia Commonwealth University and got a master's degree from Tufts, two great schools, and New York University. I used to live down the street from NYU when I lived in Manhattan.
No kidding. Yeah? It's a great place to live.
Absolutely. Right there near Lincoln Center and just a beautiful campus. Yeah. So how did you get into all this political stuff?
Well, I've always been a little fascinated with politics and policy, and ever since I was a little kid, I've always wanted to live in Washington and do what I'm doing. So it really is, for me, it's kind of like a dream come true.
Has it met your expectations over the years, or are you disappointed?
I think it's surpassed them.
Really?
I've gotten to be living in Washington and doing what I do, working with the National Association of Realtors and real estate, and really been, I think, in the middle of a lot of historic activities and historic actions and events. So it's surpassed whatever I had thought when I was a child of 10 years old walking the streets of Washington, D.C. with my parents.
Sure. Well, you do a great job for us, Russell. You don't know how much you're appreciated. And
thank you.
No, I'm serious. And I've been around since, can't even remember now, 90. Anyway, I've been around for a while, and I've known you for a long time. And thank you for being. This is your actual third show on Let's Talk Land. We get you on annually. Right. Probably with the way things are going, need to get you on monthly. So much going on.
Well, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, a friend of mine says, you know, we get a month's worth of news in one day now. So it's a lot going on out there.
In 1 hour.
Yeah, exactly. But you've made a recent presentation. I'm not real sure where, you can tell me, but on the business not as usual, I have your PowerPoint here. And the three major points are staying healthy, staying safe, and staying sane, which I find this I really want to hear from you. I'm going to back out and let you kind of go through that if you want to.
Sure. Staying sane is probably the biggest challenge these days.
Yeah, how do you do that?
But, you know, I do hope your listeners are staying healthy and staying safe. And, This is a tough time. It's been a really unprecedented time for Washington, D.C., and for all across the country.
Actually, all over the world.
All over the world, yeah. And, what's really amazed me and just impressed me so much has been the way realtors and real estate professionals have really stepped in and done the hard work of lifting up communities all across the country.
That's an interesting statement.
We hear stories about realtors volunteering at food banks and organizing and hosting blood drives and helping out first responders and sewing masks. I mean, it's just been incredible. And, it really just goes to show the extent to which realtors really are involved in and just tremendously care about their community and their neighborhood.
Well, I tell a quick story, but before I got my license, although my dad was a realtor back in the 50s and 60s and died when I was 18, but I forgot where I was. I was traveling, and I had chipped a tooth, and it was like a Friday afternoon, and God, I was in an area I didn't know I didn't know anything about it. I definitely didn't know any dentist, didn't have any relationships, and I stopped at a stoplight, and at the corner there was a real estate office. I said, So I pulled in the real estate office, went in, this nice realtor there, told her what the problem was, and she says, Mr. Jewell, she says, you know what, one of my best friends is a dentist, and she said, let me give him a call and see if he can help you out. Daggum, she didn't set that up. I went straight over, got right in the chair, he fixed me up. I mean, and I tell people, and I want to put this out on the show. No, I'm serious. If you, I don't care where you are or what you're doing, if you have some need, always ask a realtor. Go by a real estate office. You'll find the most compassionate and impressive people. I mean, that's just who we are because we serve the public. We serve the public.
I don't disagree. That's absolutely right. And, I think you'll see that has really come through with the in the pandemic that's been happening since March. And that's really when the very first Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act was passed. That's the CARES Act.
Right.
And that was passed by Congress in March, and that really set the bar and set the precedent for not economic recovery, at least a really solid and robust response to the pandemic. You know, if you can remember back in March, I think there was tremendous amounts of panic among everybody as it became clear that we were going to have to shut the economy down for no one knew how long. And it was just, we were in some respects jumping off a cliff and saying, we're going to try to figure out some way to keep everybody afloat. But right now we have to shut everything down. And that means very little economic activity will be occurring for at least 3 months. And so Congress really stepped up and in a bipartisan manner passed the CARES Act, which really spelled out four different ways to prop up the economy and at least allow people to buy their basic necessities of life, food, water, keep a roof over their heads, and keep their cars running. So I'll just briefly mention the four, and then we can go into a little bit.
No, please, because, I know a lot of people are aware of some of these things, but, there's been some updates since March, and not everybody's familiar with the intricacies like you are.
A lot of twists and turns since then, but
you were right there reading the papers and stuff.
Yeah, the four programs was, first of all, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program.
That was the first thing?
Yep. Then it was the Payroll Protection Program. Third was the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. And then finally, it was just individual relief, which was basically the government provided a one-time cash payment of a certain amount of money to all eligible adults, just to keep, you know, just to have money in their bank account.
Yeah, I got my check, and my wife did too, and it came in handy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it probably wasn't enough, but it was something, which was better than nothing, and that went out. So the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, or the PUA program, that's basically unemployment benefits.
Okay.
Now, that is generally a program that you pay into it, and then when you need it, you are able to get money out of that.
How do you pay into it, Russell? How do you pay?
Yeah, it's through your taxes.
Okay.
It's a state-run program, so if you need unemployment insurance, you get unemployed, you can draw on what you put into it.
Gotcha, collectively.
And yeah. It's done by the state. They run the program. So the difference here is the fact that anybody became eligible for unemployment if they had employment, and then as a result of the coronavirus shutdown, all of a sudden they had no more employment. They were able to draw upon, they were able to draw money, unemployment assistance. And it was run, these programs are run by the state. They were able to receive 39 weeks of assistance if needed, basically through December of this year. And there was an additional allotment of $600 per week that is going to be ending here at the end of July. That additional $600 ends at the end of July. So that's the PUA, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program.
Okay.
The next one is the Payroll Protection Program, otherwise known as the PPP. This was basically a program that Congress said, listen, we will give you to businesses, primarily, hopefully, small businesses. To small businesses, if you keep your employees on board, we will give you, first of all, we're going to give you a loan. You apply for a loan through your bank, and you will receive money. It will be a loan to be repaid back. If you keep your employees on board and you're able to pay them something through receiving this loan, it will no longer be a loan. It will be a grant. You do not have to pay it off if you keep your employees on. And that program was extended through August 8th. So that's kind of on the downswing as well. That was a more controversial program because when it first came out, there was a lot of discussion about, well, wait a second, you know, all these, yes, a lot of small businesses were receiving PPP loans and grants, but a lot of other businesses were receiving it too that, you know, was a little controversial. Harvard initially received a PPP loan. Law firms received PPP loans. Steakhouses, national chain steakhouses, received it. And so there was a lot of, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a lot of discussion about, well, wait a second, you know, this money was supposed to go to small businesses. Ruth Chris Steakhouse is not a small business.
That's right.
But the way it was written, hey, they were able to take advantage of it. So there was that was a little bit more of a controversial one. So there was something like $400 billion initially put into that very first tranche of money for the PPP program. That went away quickly. I mean, that was distributed within 3 weeks. So there was another tranche of another, I would say, close to $400 billion was provided to the PPP program to be distributed. It slowed, and there's actually still money in there right now in the PPP program. And that's been extended to August 8th. So that's going to be going away soon as well if Congress doesn't step in and do something else.
Okay. Our guest today is Russell Riggs. He's our Senior Policy Representative at NAR. Hey, I'd like to thank our sponsor, LandHub. If you're looking to buy or sell land, LandHub previews thousands of properties nationwide. That's LandHub.com. Russell
All
said,
right.
yeah, keep talking about this payroll protection program. It's interesting.
Yeah. So the other two programs were the Economic Injury Disaster Loan and the just individual relief that's basically cash provided to taxpayers. So let me just quickly go over the Economic Injury Disaster Loan. You know, this is a standard loan that the SBA has had for many years, and it's basically a loan that if you're in the midst of a disaster after a hurricane or flood or something, you can apply to the SBA for a loan. It's a straightforward loan. My brother he has his own business. It's just him. And he actually took advantage of all of these programs, and he was able to get a disaster loan, economic injury disaster loan from the SBA. It's like 30 years, and it's maybe a 2.5 or 3%.
Yeah, very low interest, right?
Yeah, very low interest. And, you know, it just provides a bridge to help you get back on your feet.
Now, if you get that, if you get that loan, let's say you got $10,000, I think that's the max. Let's say he only needed $5,000. Do they go ahead and give him the $10,000 and he returns the $5,000, or how does that work? Do you know the mechanics?
I'm not sure the mechanics. I know that I think you can get more than $10,000. The emergency advance is $10,000, which is forgivable debt.
Okay.
So I think you know, it depends on a lot of different factors in terms of how big your business was,
right?
The damage it sustained, et cetera.
Yeah. So the key to that was there's $10,000 that's non obligatory.
Right.
Okay. I just
want
to clarify that fact because that kind of got confusing. Yeah. And then the rest of it, you're obligated.
Yeah. So taking together all of these different unemployment assistance, the PPP, the injury disaster loan, and then finally, we just, Congress in the CARES Act authorized just a one-time cash payment of $1,200 per adult plus $500 for each child under 17. And there were some income thresholds that you had to meet, and that amount went down the higher income that you had. But again, it just was a way to get people have a cash infusion so that they could have some money in the bank and immediately pay off their, you know, their monthly mortgage or their rent or food, utilities, car payment, whatever they had to do. Because all of a sudden, millions of people were out of work and had no way to earn an income. And the other individual relief part of that, which I think was an interesting way, too, was it allowed taxpayers with retirement accounts, such as 401ks or IRAs, allowed them to take early withdrawals of up to $100,000 with no 10% early withdrawal penalty, which, as you know, that's a pretty big bite.
Yes, it is.
Out of anything that you withdraw.
Sure it is.
And you're allowed to pay that back over a three-year period. So it just basically was a way to allow people to tap into their retirement accounts without the penalty and repay it over 3 years. So I think that also helped as well. So all four of these programs were actually really effective at propping things up for a few months. I mean, it really was, there's no question, people suffered, people were out of work, they had no income. Everybody was stressed out. I know that I was.
Yes, sir.
And so there were definite impacts, but it really did keep the economy from going over a cliff.
I have a question. You may not be able to answer it. Of each of these four programs, do you know how much has been allocated? And do you know if there's any amount left?
Well, let's see. I mean, total, it was about $3 trillion. I'm not sure exactly how much for each one. I know the PPP probably had a total of $800 billion total to it. The individual relief package was obviously in the trillions. So it was the biggest relief package ever passed and signed into law.
And that goes directly towards
it equaled trillions of dollars when it was said and done.
And that goes directly to our debt load, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, yes, this will increase the national debt. I mean, the federal government had not budgeted for this $3 trillion expenditure. So basically, the Department of Treasury is just going to tack it onto the debt, and that's the way we're going to pay it back.
But Russell, one thing maybe I don't understand is it's basically zero interest, is it, to the government because of the low interest, banking interest, isn't it? As opposed to years ago when we were taxed 3% or 4%, when we borrowed money from like that. Right?
Yeah, as far as I know, that's exactly the way it works now.
Yeah, so it's really a $3 trillion. Let's use that number debt, but if you look at the interest that would accrue, it's really a whole lot cheaper right now.
Yeah. Now the other part of this package was there are some interesting homeowner and renter forbearance provisions.
Yeah, this is really interesting.
Well.
Yeah.
And this is really becoming a big issue because we're bumping up to the end of some of these programs. And so the real concern is that, yes, particularly for like rental payments, let's say if I rented my apartment and I still don't have a job and the rental forbearance is ending, I have to pay my rent somehow, and I have no idea how I'm going to pay my rent because my job still has not come back. And so there's a real concern that there's going to be this huge shortfall of people being able to pay rent. And this has a couple of different ramifications. First of all, it has ramifications for the renter. They might be evicted. There was a forbearance on renters being evicted from their apartment, and that is ending. That forbearance is ending. So landlords are going to be able to evict their tenants if they haven't paid their rent.
What's the end date,
Russell?
What's the end date on that?
If people are paying their rent, yeah. If people are not paying their rent, then landlords are not paying their mortgage.
Right.
Because that's how they pay their mortgage. You know, if you're in a multifamily apartment building, or even if you're renting a single family, there's a landlord who rents that and manages that property. And if you're not paying your rent to them, they can't pay the people that they owe their
right.
mortgage.
So
it's really going to be a domino effect. And that's something we really have to really look out for and be careful because we don't want people being evicted and homeless through no fault of their own because the government shut the economy down.
What's the end date?
That's something else. Yeah. Go ahead, Luke.
Yeah. What's the end date on that? When's that supposed to?
Well, I mean, it's coming up at the end of July.
Okay.
A lot of this stuff ends at the end of July, so that's why we're
scrambling.
We're looking
now.
At kind of a cliff. We're walking up to it, and we're going to have to figure out how we're going to negotiate that.
So is that
one of the things that Congress, when they get back fully after in about a week, they're going to have to figure out after the CARES Act was passed in March and some supplemental were passed in May, the next iteration of the CARES Act. What is that going to look like? And there's a lot of questions that they're going to have to ask themselves. Is Congress going to put in additional monies into the PPP, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, or the unemployment assistance programs? Are they going to send out another stimulus check, just a cash infusion to people like they did before?
Right.
$1,200 check that they sent out. Relief for landlords. Just exactly the issue that I was talking about before. You know, if landlords aren't receiving their their rental checks, they cannot keep the property. And there may be a wave of evictions, a wave of landlord bankruptcies, and just a wave of particularly in rental properties, just a wave of dysfunction in all of those markets.
Yeah.
What role will transportation and infrastructure play? You know, that's one of the things that Washington has always fallen back on during recessionary and tough economic times is, well, let's get some shovel-ready jobs out there. Let's fund those, give people work, and at least give them a paycheck, and it will be a huge economic investment in our transportation and infrastructure systems, which, by the way, right now are in dire need of improvement, enhancement, and maintenance. So now, is there going to be a huge infrastructure legislation that will move forward? And I think the last issue is this. The CARES Act and the subsequent supplementary legislation to the CARES Act and this next iteration of the CARES Act is more of a still in a response and recovery mode. The real question is, at what point do we start moving to an economic stimulus mode? Economic recovery and response to the crisis is different from stimulus. And so there's been a lot of discussion in Congress right now about this next iteration of the CARES Act. Will it be response or recovery, or will it be a stimulus package? I'm thinking right now it's going to be response and recovery, and then there will be another broader stimulus package further down the road. But we'll have to wait and see. There's a lot of debate about that, lots of discussion, and that's still to be determined by congressional leadership. It's going to take additional billions of dollars to continue propping up the economy, especially if there is a second wave of the COVID-19 flu that ripples through the economy and ripples across the country. That could happen in the November-December timeframe, prior to a vaccine being widely available, and we have a second wave because that's when these diseases tend to crop up, is in November and December. So, you know, there's a lot of things to think about. I would say one of the interesting bright notes in this whole situation, it really only refers to real estate, is the fact that to the extent to which people are able to do the whole real estate transaction online from start to finish. I have talked to lots of realtors who have said, yeah, I have sold houses throughout this whole pandemic shutdown, and I never did an open house, never met the buyer in person. We did it all online, did it all virtual, did a 360 open house with my iPhone, and did all the paperwork online, was able to get it notarized, which in some states have been a problem, was able to get all the information, all the paperwork notarized. They sent the check, and boom, property sold. So I think that's, if nothing else, this pandemic has shown the extent to which the importance of internet connections and broadband and making sure those are working effectively. And that's one of the areas that I think lots of these future bills or legislation in Congress are going to focus on, is making sure that that our internet works well, works effectively, and works in areas that have not been traditionally well connected to the internet,
right,
particularly in rural areas.
Yeah, our guest today.
Our guest today. A lot of push to effective and robust broadband all across the country.
Our guest today is Russell Riggs. This is Let's Talk Land. Our sponsor is LandHub.com. View thousands of properties for sale at LandHub.com. So, the last part of your presentation on this virus.
Right. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, like I said before, there's a lot of discussion going on right now. Congress is on recess. And when they come back, they have a lot of these big questions that they're going to have to answer about how much more money they're going to spend propping up the economy. And so, you know, I think they'll do something. It probably won't be as extensive as the previous CARES Act, but certainly they can't leave people high and dry. And so I think there will be something that will pass, and additional response and recovery will move forward to Congress. Now, if you really want a good, solid website that focuses on the real estate aspect of this whole situation, I would encourage you to go to nar.realtor/coronavirus FAQ.
Yeah, repeat that, Russell.
Yeah, nar.realtor/coronavirus FAQ. And there's a just robust amount of information about the coronavirus, the stimulus, all these different packages, and particularly how it impacts real estate and realtors and real estate professionals.
And that's constantly updated, true, right? I mean, as things
constantly
happen.
Constantly updated. Yeah, I was just reading it today, and some of my colleagues had gone in there and updated it as of July 6th.
So okay. Yeah, that's
very
important.
Very, very well updated.
Yeah, especially for the realtors out there if you want to know what's going on. And I know our national website, the emails we get, I assume that's probably the same website, right? On the NAR site, yeah.
Yeah, okay. NAR.realtor.
But the public can go to this, too.
Our overall website.
Yeah, but the listing audience, it's non-realtors or real estate agents, they can go to this, too.
Oh, yeah. This is for anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is for everybody.
Yeah.
It's on the public side.
All right. Is there anything else that we need to know about currently? And we're waiting on Congress to get back and to review the things that you've talked about and see what goes next, I guess, right?
Yeah, we're in a little bit of a waiting game right now. And some of these programs are going to be ending at the end of July and towards the middle of August. So Congress will need to get back and get to work right away.
Russell, what advice would you give to the listening audience? You know, we're all sitting around. We don't know what to do, where to turn. How can the public get involved, and maybe stimulate some of these folks up there that's going to be making decisions? How do we do that?
Well, I mean, you know, call your – I mean, it sounds a little trite and a little bit cliched, but, you know, your representatives in Congress respond to their constituents. So I would encourage everyone to call your congressman and senator, the local district office, and tell them when they go back to work at the middle of July to get to work on working on a bipartisan plan to stimulate the economy and additionally respond and recover to the coronavirus pandemic.
And you can still write letters, believe it or not, and you can also email.
Write letters, send emails. They respond to constituents. They respond to voters. More so than they respond to someone like me who is a professional lobbyist and does this for a living.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask that question.
They respond to people in their district.
Okay,
because much more.
Most of the public think that they just listen to the lobbyists, you know, because they pay their little tabs.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
But if you really want to get something done, you guys, everyone out there, get on board and contact and make waves happen here, okay?
Right.
All right. Russell, there's some other things that you take care of and your staff, and I think there's like 70 guys in the NAR group, right? Is that something?
Yeah,
like
I mean, we have a whole staff of people who
in Washington and also in Chicago at our National Association of Realtors office.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, in Washington, D.C., we have a whole staff of people who like me who are constantly monitoring legislation, monitoring regulations, contacting congressional staff and regulatory officials on behalf of realtors in the real estate industry. I mean, we really strive to be your voice for real estate in Washington, and don't mean to toot our own horn, but, you know, we're in some respects, we're the biggest trade association in the country. 1.4 million members. So when we say something, people tend to listen to us in terms of real estate issues and issues, economic development issues and those kinds of things.
Right.
We tend to have a pretty big voice in those. So, our voice is amplified every day by realtors and our members who are, in the community, pursuing these issues and talking about these issues with their clients and with members of Congress.
Now, one thing that we have, Russell, in our organization is the Real Estate PAC, RPAC, where donate money, and it's not tax deductible. When you donate it, it's a pure donation, okay? But we encourage all the 1.4 million realtors to participate in this program because that's the funding that's used at all levels, and I want to emphasize that. It's not just at the national level. If I'm a real estate agent, I'm a realtor, and I run for mayor of Pilot Mountain, there's advocacy for me, there's money for me to help my campaign from the local town level all the way to the state level, all the way to the federal government. And that's where these funds go and keep you guys out there pushing our causes. So if you're a realtor listening to this show and you don't give to RPAC, shame on you because you're missing opportunity.
Hey, Lou, did I just hear you that you are – did you just make an announcement that you're running for mayor of Mount Pilot?
No, I did that 20 years ago. There were two of us, and I came in second.
Well, now's the time.
Yeah, I know.
Time is right.
But the voting machine switched the votes, which I proved, but I didn't care. So it's a true story. But anyway, let's get into some more important things for our audience.
You're absolutely true about RPAC.
Yeah.
It is an investment in the industry. It is an investment in your business, and as I like to say, if you're not at the table, you're going to be on the menu. So we need to be at the table when these discussions are occurring in D.C. and RPAC helps make that happen.
It sure does. So, shout out to RPAC and get out there and I mean, if it's $10 or what, you know, it doesn't matter. I give a whole lot more than that, but you know. And I do it every year. I've done it since I've been a realtor, and I'm proud to do it.
Minimum investment is $15.
Yep, there you go. Thank you.
That's a week's worth of Starbucks coffee.
Yeah, you got it. And you get Russell Riggs and company. So
yeah.
I love it. All right, let's go to a couple of these things that's still reoccurring. One of the things that you guys work on for us is the Water of the U.S. upgrade. What's going on? What's current?
Right, so Waters of the U.S., it's a little bit of a complex topic. I'm going to see if I can boil it down for your listeners here. It's all about the Waters of the U.S. issue is all about who regulates water. The stream, the river, lake, or stream that's running through your town. Who regulates that? Who makes sure it's clean? What level of government is responsible for that body of water? And so the Clean Water Act really is the law that sets out who regulates what bodies of water. So, for example, the big lake or river or stream that's running through your town, most likely it runs across state lines. It goes from North Carolina to South Carolina down to to the bay and down to the Atlantic Ocean. That is going to be most likely regulated by the federal government. They want to make sure that that water body is clean, is safe, there's not a lot of pollution in it, and that's the responsibility of the federal government. Now, if there's a smaller body of water, a small little creek or something that only runs a few miles, that could be the responsibility of the state or the county government. And even the local government might get involved in making sure that that water body is clean, that that water body is not polluted. And because, you know, a lot of people get their water straight from that little stream or from that river or lake. So we want to make sure that the water is kept clean and not polluted. Now, the challenge comes into who is doing the regulating and how many regulations there are. Let's say that I wanted to use my property for something, and there was some water running through it. There was a river or a lake or something. I have to get permission from some entity, some level of government, to do whatever I need to do, dig a ditch or build a house along that river or lake, or put out a boat dock or something like that. I have to get permission to do that. I can't just do that on my own. I have to get permits for that. So sometimes I have to go to the federal government through the Corps of Engineers to get that permit. Other times I'd need to get permission from the county government or the state or the local government. Now, the issue comes in terms of who is doing the regulating. And it's been a constant battle back and forth, because the Clean Water Act is not super clear as to what bodies of water are regulated by the federal government and what bodies of water are regulated by other government entities. So there's been a back and forth battle. There have been Supreme Court cases. On top of Supreme Court cases, there has been regulations, there's been legislation. This question still has not been cleared up. So under President Obama, they decided, you know what, we're going to take care of this issue once and for all. And the EPA, President Obama directed the EPA and the Corps to develop a regulation to figure out once and for all what bodies of water are regulated by what level of government. So they came up with a regulation that basically put the federal government in charge of just about every body of water in the United States. And that is a problem because of regulation, red tape, and bureaucracy. If there's a little stream running through your yard that was only running 2 or 3 months out of the year, and you wanted to do something in your backyard, would you really have to go to the federal government to get permission to do that, to get a permit from the federal government to do that?
Right.
That was the question. So it was very complicated. The law was not, the regulation was not well written. When it passed out of the EPA and the Corps, was signed by the president, by President Obama, and it was immediately blocked by several different courts who said, you know what, the judges all across the country said, you know what, this is too complicated. There's a lot of legal, technical issues that we don't agree with or don't understand. So we're just going to stay the rule until all these legal and technical and scientific questions are answered. Well, 6 months later, we have a new president. President Trump said, one of his very first executive orders, directed the EPA and the Corps of Engineers, to basically repeal and replace the Obama Waters of the U.S. rule. Repeal it, and then replace it with something with more certainty, something with more common sense, and would provide much better direction and clarity about what waters are regulated by the federal government and what waters are regulated by some other government entity. So it's taken close to 3 years to get that, to first of all, repeal the Obama rule, and then secondly, write a new rule that would do a much better job. And that is exactly what the Trump administration has done. They have created a new Waters of the U.S. rule that provides clarity, It provides transparency, and it provides clear direction as to what waters are regulated by the federal government and what waters are regulated by state, county, or local governments. Now, keep in mind, this is no waters are left unregulated. And that is an important part. Okay. We want to make sure our waters are clean. We want to make sure water quality is high. And that's why it's an important point to note that there are no waters left unregulated. They are all regulated by some entity, whether it's the federal government, in the case of the obvious big, you know, bays and rivers and big lakes and those kinds of big wetlands adjacent to those water bodies. It's important to regulate those to make sure they are clean and the water quality is important and high. And in other respects, it's important to make sure that economic development can occur. So it's a balance of those two issues, making sure that water quality is good and also making sure that economic development and economic activity can continue.
Okay.
So that is where we stand right now. There is a new Trump Waters of the U.S. rule that clearly defines the level of regulation and who regulates waters of the U.S. And so we are seeing it implemented right now as we speak. This new rule is being implemented. Anecdotally, we're getting stories back that this is a fantastic rule and is helping everyone understand exactly the line between who regulates what waters. And there's already more clarity, more transparency, and more accountability on that.
Okay. Russell, with respect to time, we only got about 3 minutes left. I just want to mention these others. National Flood Insurance Program, the Endangered Species Act, the Unmanned the Drone Act, and then the Farm Bill Reauthorization. Can you just briefly cover the Farm Bill Reauthorization, where we are with that?
Sure. Well, you know, I think I wanted to talk about the NFIP as well, because that's a pretty big issue.
Yeah, please.
The National Flood Insurance Program is something that provides, you know, it's a program run by the federal government, provides flood insurance for millions of properties across the country. North Carolina has really bad floods, and so you make sure that there is flood insurance. Unfortunately, the program is in bad shape financially, and so it's always in danger of expiring. It is in danger of expiring at the end of September of this year. So as we talked about with the CARES Act, if people have an interest and concern about the National Flood Insurance Program, call your congressman and senator and say, please don't let this program expire. I need flood insurance. I can't get it through the private market. The only way I can get flood insurance is through this federal program. So please don't let it expire. That's point number one.
When's it expiring, Russell?
Program expire.
When is it expiring?
Point number two is you got to make it. You got to make it better, and you got to improve it and reform it.
When's that expiring, Russell?
It expires the end of September of this year.
Wow, man, Congress is going to have a lot to do when they get back.
Exactly.
Wow.
They're gonna be busy.
Hey, I was wrong on my time. We got a little more time than I mentioned, so you can look at your watch.
Okay.
So
the Farm Bill is, you know, a perennial issue. It probably passed the most recent Farm Bill passed about 3 years ago, and it's usually on a five-year reauthorization schedule.
Okay.
But they're already talking about reauthorizing it and how they're going to reform it. Again, I would just encourage everyone. The Farm Bill is the bill that provides resources to farmers to make sure they're able to withstand the vagaries of weather and markets and things like that. It's important to make sure that our farms are providing the food and fiber that we need to move forward as a country. And so I just think it's really important. They're just probably going to start, the people in Congress are going to begin to start talking about reauthorizing the Farm Bill probably this year in the fall. And so it usually takes several months for them to figure out exactly what parts of the Farm Bill they want to take on in terms of reforming it and things like that. So those discussions are going to start happening fairly soon, but not yet, probably in the fall.
Okay. But we're okay where we are right now, right? In your opinion, or is there
right now we're good.
Okay.
Yeah, right now we're good.
The last bill that they passed is really a good bill, and it's covering everyone right now.
Yeah.
Excellent. Tax reform. What's going on with that?
So, well, there was a big tax reform bill that passed a couple of years ago. The issue for that in terms of, for the Realtors Land Institute, was this issue of 1031 like-kind exchanges, which was left, luckily, relatively untouched in the tax reform bill. And we want to keep it that way. We want to make sure that that like-kind exchange is maintained and kept just the way it is, because right now it's very favorable for people who would like to exchange property for something else of the same value, and that's critical.
Yeah.
And so we want to make sure that it's kept the exact same way. There's always the problem is it's a big money maker, and so Washington is always looking at these so-called tax loopholes to say, hey, maybe there's some way we can tap into that.
Yeah, because
and we want to make sure they stay away from that.
Because what that's
so that's been our push.
Yeah.
Because I mean, this is a really important and critical economic driver, particularly for farmers and in rural areas. And so we want to maintain that very favorable tax treatment for 1031 like-kind exchanges.
Yeah. And what you're doing there, maybe I'm on a farm or on a let's say I own a 10 or 12 unit apartment house and I've depreciated it out. I'm getting older. You know, I'm tired of doing it, tired of owning it. I want to put it up for sale. And under normal situations, I'm going to pay that capital gains, assuming, you know, that I bought it low and I'm selling it high and the difference less expenses.
Yeah.
So now I decide that I want to go buy a farm, okay, as a business, not as a home, as a business, because all this has to do with business. And maybe I want to buy two farms, or maybe I want to buy three farms. I can buy up to three properties, and it don't have to be. The confusing thing about 1031, because I teach this in my classes, is the word like kind. So people think if you have apartments, you got to go sell it and buy apartments. No, you can buy up to three properties,
exactly.
And they don't have to be apartments, and you can not exceed the amount, or you can exceed, there's a caps on that, and then there's a clock on it, too. That you have to do all this through an intermediary, a third party. You cannot touch the money physically when you go to that closing. It has to go to a third party administrator, and then that money's dispersed with the properties that you've identified during that 45-day period. So what they're doing is you're deferring the tax.
Yeah,
this
it's
is
a question of value.
Yeah.
It's a question of like-kind value.
Value, exactly. But what you're doing is you're deferring those taxes.
I would say it's not you know, the like-kind exchange is not under threat at this time. There's not a lot of appetite in Congress to do additional tax reform. So I think we're okay for the next couple of years in terms of some kind of a big tax reform bill. But, you know, if there's a new president, that's certainly one way that he can make his mark. So, you know, the political winds, if they shift to something else in November, then we may want to start looking at another tax reform bill down the line. But right now, I don't think tax reform is really on anybody's radar or anybody's agenda.
Russell, of the things that we've talked about, is there anything new that's not on this list that you guys are working on?
No, you know, I think right now it's just been adapting and responding to COVID-19, and all the different things that have affected real estate as a result of that. And we've just been keeping our head above water on that stuff. And that's really been keeping us just
going overtime since March.
Yeah.
Well, I don't anticipate that's going to end anytime soon.
Yeah. But fortunately, the real estate market is booming. Interest rates are low. We put signs up on a house. We get sell it in 24 hours. Three offers, more than what we listed for. Land. So, we're in rural area. They're coming out of these cities. I don't want to work. See, this whole bear time is changing, and I think there's going to be a lot. You know, people talk about all this negative stuff, but there's a lot of good stuff that's evolving, whether it maintains its momentum or not. But, you know, we're in a rural market here and outside of Winston-Salem, 100 miles north of Charlotte, on the southern rural Virginia border, at the edge of the Blue Ridge Mountains, just beautiful area. And what I had Eddie Blanton on. You know Eddie. He's the national president for CCIM out of Charlotte and North Carolina, and one of my best friends. And he did a show a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about what's going to happen to the commercial market. You know, these high-rise office buildings. And, you know, American Express made a comment, you know, we're going to keep 80% of our employees at home, you know, to the end of the year. And now, you know, people are calling us up and they're saying, you know, I work for American Express and I've been going to Greensboro in this building with 100 people, you know, all next together, and I'm at home. And, you know, I want to get out of here, you know, and I want to have 5 acres or 10 acres, and I want this social distancing in reality, which is called the rural market. So our land sales are just jumping off the sheets too. And this is not just here locally. I mean, the people are moving out of California. They're moving out of New York for obvious reasons or other reasons. It doesn't matter. But they're coming out, and they're looking for these rural areas and rural markets. So,
no, I think that's right. I mean, there are bright spots all over the country. There was in May, our pending home sales went up like 4%. Gangbusters. So... Yeah. I think in May there was just huge pent-up demand that hadn't been satisfied for the past 3 months. And so, and this is for the residential market. You know, the commercial market is a little bit obviously different, and I think a little more challenging. But again, I think what you're going to see is maybe smaller office buildings in outlying areas thriving, while the big concentrated high rises in the downtown areas are going to be empty. Because I think you can control COVID-19 better in a smaller office environment than you can in a big high rise. So, you know, I think they're clearly going to be bright spots with real estate all over the country in different markets. And I think realtors are fantastically adaptable at finding and exploiting those bright spots. And so I think that's what you're going to find that, well, you know, Lou, you're a realtor. I mean, you adapt to changing circumstances and the real estate economic environment every day.
That's true. You got to be on your toes.
Yep.
It's constantly changing. But like I said, there's, you know, there's just so much negativity out there, and there's so much uncertainty out there. But there is, if you really sit down and breathe the air properly, there's some really good things happening too. And very positive things for the future. So, you know, and, you know, thank you guys up there for what you do. You know, RPAC, you know, you got to get involved in that and keep maintaining it. You, the public out there, don't sit on your thumbs. Pick up the phone, like Russell said. Write a letter, if that's your way of communicating, that you're comfortable with. Every legislator at all levels have websites. They have contact information. They have staff. So, you know, air your laundry. And this is the time to do it. And the stronger that we air it, the more positive things that's going to happen. And I
encourage you. Exactly right.
But that website, www.nar.realtor/coronavirus, coronavirus, and then FAQ, that's the up-to-date of what's going on. Russell, you've been a great guest today. How do people get in touch with you?
Well, they can call me, they can email me, rriggs@nar.realtor.
Okay. We won't give you a number out. You've got your website and your email the master site. Hey, thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to suggest, we would appreciate them. All questions are welcome, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or comments as well. This show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source of land education. All shows after this morning's broadcast will be downloaded on our master website, www.letstalkland.net, Podbeam, and Spotify. My email is Lou, at mylandpro.com. My phone number is 336-669-1405. And thank you, our sponsor, LandHub.com. If you're looking to buy or sell land, LandHub.com previews thousands of property nationwide. That's LandHub.com. How do you get us here, Rodney?
Well, Lou, they can go to our website. Go to WKTE1090.com. And also, they can download the Simple Radio app and hear us anywhere in the world and universe.
To the universe.
Yeah,
I like it.
See,
good.
How about that?
Okay, cool.
Or they can give us a call at 336-983-3111.
And we have a website, too, that has that Simple Radio app
that you
can go to.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
We won some awards recently.
Yes, 5 years in a row being the top radio station on the East Coast.
And what do we play?
Only happy music.
Beach music and oldies.
That's
only happy
right.
music, right?
That's right. Make everybody happy in the world.
You got a nice award.
Yeah, the 2019 Announcer of the Year Award.
Well, I wonder why.
You're up next, I guess.
No, Dr. Barbie's up next.
Oh, yeah. He might.
Okay, stay tuned.